Access number 27811, Major Richard Wilson, Real 7. Now, we're talking about these typical patrols you went out. The initial ones, you're actually with another officer. Now, presumably, you'd be on one half of the patrol and he'd be on the other, wouldn't
he? No, I went.
So you were accompanying, you were literally with the officer.
I was with him.
His platoon sergeant had the officer.
Yes, he was teaching me what it was all about.
Now, anything happen? I think obviously you said before a couple of things happened while you were out on patrol with.
We did. Probably about the second or third patrol, I was with him. We were operating on information that had been given. I'm not quite sure by who, but and we'd been in the. We hadn't been very deep We hadn't been very deep in the jungle. We did a day patrol, and then we were, I think we were probably only doing a day patrol, that particular one, and we were about to come out when we literally walked into some CTs, or they walked into us, rest of it, and it was one of these occasions of, I suppose he yelled bandits or whatever it is, and we virtually stayed where we were, and they walked straight into us. And I think can't remember how many of them there were, but three, four, something like that. And I think we killed two or three of them. One of which was quite a sort of high up CT, because they had their own. Command network, just the same as we did, and a lot of them were known. And I don't think we carry them with us on patrol, but certainly back at base, we had photographs of all these people that we sort of looked at before we went out. And this chap was equivalent of a platoon commander or that something like that. So we came out with three CTs.
You interrogate those three CTs straight away?
Well, if they were alive, yes.
I
think they were dead.
Would you bring the corpses with you?
Or? Yes. And this wasn't difficult because we weren't deep in the jungle. They were easy to get out. There were occasions, but although it never happened to me, where platoons, I'm told, were too deep in, and they either had to bring a head out or hands out or whatever it is, but they were too deep in to carry the bodies out. But it was important to the intelligence boys that they knew who it was, we'd got. And the other thing that I can remember we did, which today would be absolute, people would hold their hands up in total horror, it was difficult to let the local population know that we were getting somewhere and that we'd actually caught some CTs. I mean, if they're alive, that's easy. You take them into the village and say, these are the chaps who've been taking food off you, and we've got them. But if they were dead, then we used to put them on the bonnets of the vehicles and drive the bodies round the village, so the villagers knew that they were people who'd been terrorizing them. And that, as I say, probably wouldn't be called politically correct on that. But yes, if they were alive, then they were got back to base, either your company base.
Now, at this stage, did you take any alive while you were with Bonner?
With Hopper. I just can't remember. I just can't.
Let's look at the interrogation procedure. Or would that be better with a later incident?
No. Should there have been one alive, then he would have been brought back to company headquarters.
You wouldn't interrogate him out in the jungle?
No, because we probably couldn't talk to him.
No interpreter, then.
Didn't have an interpreter with us and the rest of it. Unless sometimes you possibly, if you had an Iban tracker with you, he might be able to speak the language. But otherwise, back to battalion, back to company headquarters, where there'll be a sort of company ops room. And from there, he would either be sent back to KL, to battalion headquarters, to be interrogated by the battalion set up, or else the intelligence officer might come out from battalion headquarters to your company base and do the interrogation there, because one of the people that he'd probably want there when interrogating would be the local police officer, because it sounds from everything I've said so far there were no police, but there were the police had a full set up, and we had a police set up in just down the road from Sangimangas. I can't remember what the name of the place was now. We had and that had a European police officer with all his mostly, I think, Malay police, and obviously he was obviously another source, and his policemen were another source of information, and we worked very, very closely in with the police. And I'm trying to remember the name of the policeman, Dougie Ross, I think it was, who's a great character.
But you liaised closely with
them. So we liaised closely with the police, because they probably also got a lot of information on their net.
Now, what were the methods of interrogation, or would you not be privy to that?
Well, I wasn't very privy to that. It would just be to get as much out of the... chap quickly, so that if he's got anything to give us, we can then get back in as quickly as possible while the iron is hot. If he was an important chap, then probably he'd go back. Went back to KL, where of course Special Branch would deal with them. A lowly platoon commander, I didn't come into contact really with any of that.
While you were out on patrol, would you maintain a wireless silence, or would you be in contact with the other patrol, or would you be in contact with anyone?
No, we were wireless. We weren't particularly wireless silence for the sake of being wireless silence, but to actually set these things up. It's not like today where we would all have a mobile phone. It would be dead easy. Probably to set the wireless up would take 15-20 minutes, and then the wireless operator's got to shin up a tree with a damn great wire sort of aerial and get it up the tree. And communication was very difficult in the jungle. Airwaves don't pass very well through that sort of kit.
Why take it? Or was it just on the off chance it might be used in emergency?
Well, we wanted it for... when we battered up in the evening, we would probably get through to company headquarters, say where we are, what we'd done, and what grid squares we had dealt with. They could also tell us if anything's come through in the day to give us any further information of where something might be going on. And then, of course, again, sometimes you had to get people out medically, and you wanted to tell your company headquarters where you were and where you're liable to be coming out, so they can get transport and medical assistance or whatever it might be there. But it was not an easy job, sort of getting through on the air. You didn't just sort of pick the thing up and say, you know, hello, etc. It didn't happen. So it could, I don't know. I mean, I think it depended on what sort of operation you were doing. If you were doing a big operation, let's say you were two or three companies all working together, and the battalion commander wanted to know what was going on, he might give out orders that at 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, or whatever it is, wants to get on the air and report back as to where you are and, you know, whether anything has happened, something like that. But it certainly wasn't turned on all the time, because it just wasn't physically possible.
Now, anything else about these early patrols when you weren't in command, where you were just basically tagging along?
I was just tagging along. Yes. No, I don't think. I don't think anything. I mean,
I just remembered one thing. Perhaps just to end it, what weapons were you carrying? I mean, because you mentioned the Bren, but was it Stens or was it rifle?
Well, we had the officer carried an American 300 carbine, which was a lightweight rifle, not very effective, quite honestly.
A single shot
rifle. Yes. A single shot, but you didn't have to reload or anything. It every time you pulled the trigger, a bullet went off. But it was not a very good stopping weapon, and you could hit a communist terrorist with one of those, and he'd still go on running quite happily, you know, unless you got him through the heart, whatever it was. Then we didn't have Stens, but we had a gun called an Owen gun, which was an Australian equivalent of the Sten. But it was a much better jungle weapon than the Sten, because the Sten, the magazine comes out at right angles to the body of the gun, and would catch every tree creeper, and everything that you can think of. Whereas the Owen, the magazine came out of the body of the gun, either below or on top. I can't quite remember which way it went, but it was in line with the body of the gun, so it didn't catch on everything to your left or right. And I don't know quite who carried. Perhaps the leading scout carried that.
You just had one.
I think we just had one. Otherwise, it was old 303. Well, what they called a number 5 rifle. Now, this was a 303 with a shortened barrel. It wasn't as long as the normal World War II 303. It was a shorter weapon, but it all worked on the same principle and the same ammunition and everything, but it was had a shorter barrel.
And the Bren.
And the Bren, yes.
And the Bren was to provide...
The Bren was to, if you wanted some heavy fire, then you got it with you. Because we really didn't have anything, you know, it was not like normal warfare where you could, you know, you can call in your 3-inch mortars and call in some air power and all that sort of thing. I mean, you know, you were out there in your 8 map squares or whatever it was, and you were on your own. That was it. And I mean, if there'd been an unfortunate time and a British patrol had been totally wiped out, it could have been quite some time before anybody knew what had happened to it.
Would you have grenades with you, or were they any use in the jungle?
Did we have grenades?
A bit difficult to throw without bouncing.
I don't know. I have a feeling on some patrols, but I don't think on any. We possibly carried an EY rifle, Now, the EY rifle was a 303 rifle with a grenade discharger at the end of the barrel, and you place the grenade in the sort of cup that was at the top of the barrel. Fire, I presume, can't have been a 303. Well, it must have been something like a blank type thing, which then the air rushed up the rifle and then would throw the grenade, I don't know, 30 or 40 yards, something like that. But I certainly can't ever remember one being used, and to a certain extent it could be a very double-edged weapon, because you might blast off this thing, it flies out of the end of the rifle, hits a tree 15 yards away from you, and comes back to you about as fast as it went out. So I think it probably wasn't. But I'm sure they were used at, you know, one time or another. I suppose they could be useful if you were going into, if you knew definitely where a camp was and you were going into a set piece attack on a camp, and you wanted to get something into it sort of before everybody got there, then I suppose they might be used. I can't remember actually that being used, but they were there. We did have them.
Any other weapons, or is that it? That sounds like it.
I think that was it, yes. I mean, the officer didn't, as I say, he had a carbine, didn't have a pistol. Pistol wouldn't have been a lot of good to you in the jungle. He had a carbine. No, I think that was it.
Just picking up a couple of things. Was health a problem on these? I mean, you were going out for a few days, but, I mean, dysentery can strike after a day, or diarrhea and vomiting, you know. Were there health problems on these patrols?
Funnily enough, I can't remember any health problems at all. I mean, personally, I never got dysentery the whole time I was out there. I don't know, other than when I once managed to put my hand above a piece of bamboo when using a machete, and very, very stupidly got my hand before I got the piece of bamboo, and that landed me in hospital for a bit.
Was that an early patrol or a
late? No, that was quite late on.
Perhaps come back to
when I should have known better.
So basically, you were fundamentally healthy out there.
Yes, I think we were.
Jungle sores at all? I mean, it wouldn't be long enough for jungle sores.
I don't remember. I mean, other than things like, the only soldiers I can remember I had to sort of send medically evacuate were for sort of hornet bites, and I suppose there might have been a snake bite, you know, that sort of thing. But I can't remember. I think the general health of the battalion was very, very good. It was not as in other wars where it was or has been a problem.
Now, so you'd go out and with this, I'm still talking about when you were with this other second lieutenant or lieutenant. Well, how long would you be out for?
Between sort of 1 and 5 days. The longer patrols were sort of 5 days. I mean, there were people, and when the SAS came out, they did do deep penetration patrols, but they still actually had to be looked after by air for food and all the rest of it. Whereas we never had that problem. We went out for as long as, really, I suppose, the rations we could carry on our back, and 5 days rations plus one ammunition and everything else was probably as much as one could do under those conditions. I can't remember going out for more than 5 days on a stretch.
And would there be a debriefing at the end of the patrol?
Yes.
What was a debriefing like?
Well, look, you'll probably be debriefed by the company commander. He'd want to know exactly where you'd been, you know, what, whether you'd seen anything. I mean, a hell of a lot of these patrols, you know, you went out for 5 days, you never saw a thing. I mean, all you could come back and say is that, you know, there was not, as far as you're concerned, that there is nothing in those grid squares. And again, the local policeman would, I don't know, but I suspect he probably came up daily and got a briefing as to what all the patrols, you know, had done and all the rest of it. And then I back at battalion headquarters, they must kept in the ops room there. But in fact, one of the things I suppose I should have mentioned was that although Wardyburn in KL was our base headquarters, it wasn't actually tactical headquarters. There was a tactical headquarters at Kajang.
Is this when you'd moved to?
Well, after Kuala Kubu, then the battalion went back to its old base. We only went up for a period, I don't know what it was, 6 weeks or whatever it was, to take over from the West Camps when they were having retraining and rest. So the actual fact the battalion had I suppose you could call Wardyburn Camp a base. It was a sort of base rear headquarters. It was safe when you went back there and had a rest. You'd go into KL. You didn't. I'm sure we didn't carry weapons around with us in the middle of KL. Then we had a tactical headquarters, which would have been the sort of intelligence officer and the CO probably a lot of the time.
And where was this again?
That was at Kajang, Kajang. We had an intelligence officer called Ernie Morgan.
Hang on. So yeah. While you were at Sungai Manggis,
yes.
The headquarters had gone back to being at Wadi.
Gone back to normal.
To Wadi Burn.
Yeah.
Now you were going on to say about the intelligence officer. What was the role of the intelligence officer?
That was a gentleman called Ernie Morgan.
Captain?
Captain. He won an MC in Malur.
What was he like? What was his role and what was he like?
Well, of course, I didn't come into contact with him very often, being a very lowly second lieutenant, even the captain was quite high up in the sort of hierarchy. But he was based in Kajang, and he would have had a large ops room there with all the maps on it. He would have known all the patrols that were out from all the company outstations. And he would have been, if there'd been a large, I mean, sometimes we had a sort of a very large operation, and the whole battalion would concentrate in one area, and would be a battalion operation, and of course the IO would very much come into his own on that, and he would be responsible for that. I mean, that didn't very often happen, but there were occasions when that some really good information has come in, and they want to get the maximum amount of troops into the area, so we'd all up sticks from company locations and go and take part in a battalion operation on that.
So I'll come back to the operation. Mm. So when you'd finished, what would you? You'd go back to your base, to your billets.
Yeah.
Now, what would you be doing when you were there? You know, when you weren't out on patrol, when you were at Sungai Manggis.
Mm. Sleeping. getting clean, sort of cleaning up, And then we'd probably have a day or sometimes a couple of days back into Warleyburn, and they were let loose in KL. Give them a bit of a time off.
Now, what was recreations like in KL?
The town itself?
It's local league.
Local. Well, there were all the normal sort of bars and places. There was even a race course in the middle of KL. and they used to. Well, I'm now going to officers' recreation slightly, but and there seemed to there was a polo ground, I think, in the middle of KL as well. I don't expect it's there anymore. But the soldiers, just usual soldiers, went down, enjoyed their drink, probably women,
So tell us a bit about your time. What would you do on local leave? Would you just go to the hotels and the race courses and the clubs? Or
yes, really. I'd go down and have having got back to Warleyburn, probably meet up with one or two of your chums that you haven't seen probably for weeks, and go down and have a meal. Life wasn't that exciting, really. Then after a couple of days or a day, you return to Sangamangus and carry on doing what you've been doing.
Now, was there a problem with VD amongst them? I mean, if the men have been out and about with the women of Kuala Lumpur, no disrespect to anybody, but was there a problem with VD amongst them?
No, I don't think so. I can't remember there being a problem. On that, I can't remember any of my men sort of being off duty because of it.
Now, what about? So, how long did you? There's this period where you're being trained, in effect, by this other officer.
That 3 weeks, I suppose.
And then, what about your? Did you get your own platoon then?
Then I got my own platoon. I can't tell you who I took over from, because I can't remember. I find it actually difficult nowadays to even remember which platoon I was in command of. Which
it was in A Company, though.
It was A Company, yes. All the men, of course, except for one or two, were all National Servicemen.
Now, how did you get on with them? I will come to the platoon sergeant, who is often a key figure, and perhaps the NCO is not bombarded. How did you get on with the actual ordinary men? Would you learn their names quickly, or were you able to?
I think so. Yes, I mean, I wish now that I could remember what all their names were, but I can't. But yes, you get to know them, very very well indeed. Very quickly, you were eating, sleeping, operating, all together. And that, of course, is what makes a good platoon. It's the teamwork that is so important.
Now, did you maintain rank differentials with them? I mean, because they could quite easily call you Richard or Dick, or whatever they wanted to call you.
We very much kept rank differentials. Oh yes, I mean, I think it would have been a hell of a lot more difficult. In fact, if you hadn't,
did you call them by their first?
No,
names?
No.
Both ways, respect.
And nor did I. Nor did one the sergeant or in my case my senior corporal. No, they were Corporal Smith or...
But could the men, Private Smith or whatever, could they talk to you informally? As in, about what they're going to do this today, sir, or this and that?
Yes, I would like to think so. I mean, I, in periods off duty, I mean, one would probably get a, when you've been back a few hours, or the next day after being out 5 days, you'd probably go into their rooms and, you know, just have a chatter around and see that they were happy. And
did you know much about their backgrounds?
Well, you learnt as you went on. I like to think that one, both sides knew each other well enough that if they'd had a bad letter from home or whatever it might do, that they'd come and chat to you. And I think we were close enough for that. But we were still Smith, Jones, or whatever it is. Yeah, sir. Yeah, absolutely. I believe it's slightly different in the American army, but we didn't get to that. But I, you know, all through my service career, I would like to think that any of my soldiers could have come and talked to me at any time they wanted to.